Stop the press! It's on! After two sellout events, the Wellness Summit returns to Melbourne in 2015 for 2 days of powerhouse wellness with your favourite wellness couch host and Australia's wellness elite. Join us at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre on Saturday, August 15 and 16 for an inspirational, educational, fun, exciting, sensational cocktail of wellness that promises to help you take your life to the next level. Tickets are going like hotcakes, and why wouldn't they be? 2 days of powerhouse wellness featuring the Up For A Chat girls, the new couch rock star Kale Brock, the natural nutritionist Steph Lowe, special guest Nat Kringoutis, Quirky Joe Witten, Marcus Pierce, the Wellness Guys, and more. A limited number of 2-for-1 tickets are now available to the public, but you must hurry before they sell out. To find out more, go to www.thewellnesssummit.com.
TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives.
Welcome to today's episode of Karen's Couch. And if you can hear me giggling, it's because I've got somebody who's one of my best friends on the show with me today. And I don't know why it's taken me so long to get her on here, but welcome to the couch, my beautiful Cindy O'Meara. Thank you for joining us today, my love.
It's just like, it's so good being with you, because it's like being with you, like when we do Up For A Chat, or when we do,
I know,
we just go out and have fun together. So this is easy.
I know, and it was so funny because just before we started the show, like I have to have a couple of seconds of silence just before I start the show so that when the production team put the show together, they've got time to do the edits and the intros and all of that. And I'm trying to say to Cindy, shh. But it's, you know, it's almost impossible for either of us to actually shh. It's impossible. And I just couldn't help but crack up there. So if you heard me it's giggling, true. That's why.
It's true. It is impossible.
So I wanted to get Cindy on the show because, you know, most of you guys who listen to Karen's Couch, listen to Up For A Chat. And most of us know Cindy because she's world famous. She's a global voice for nutrition. She's a powerhouse and a powerful force for creating change. And I really wanted everybody to get a side of Cindy that I get to see. And sometimes I have to be honest, it almost brings me to tears to see somebody who is just so intently focused on being a thought leader when it comes to the health and well-being. And I remember many, many years ago, it was before, well, I mean, Cindy's been a mentor of mine ever since the day that I met her, which was about 7-8 years ago now. And, you know, initially Cindy kind of told me how to run a speaking business and told me what I needed to do to generate income so that I could keep speaking. And she's really been somebody who's, you know, held me up and helped me. And the more that I've gotten to know Cindy, the more I've gotten to see who she is as an individual and as a person. And there's a real depth there. There's a real substance, and there's a powerhouse of a person who has an incredibly soft heart and a real gentle soul that I get the very luxury of experiencing. But I don't know that many people actually get to share enough time with Cindy because she's so busy and in such demand, and everybody wants a piece of her, that we probably don't always get to see all sides of this incredible woman. And I don't want anybody that's listening to the show to think that I, you know, I'm just blowing sunshine and rainbows up Cindy's butt because she's my best friend. I really want everybody to understand that the person that we're dealing with when it comes to Cindy O'Meara is somebody who is an incredibly unique human being and really does stand head and shoulders, and I won't say above, but aside and almost beyond what most people are doing on a day-to-day basis. And she has broad enough shoulders for people like me to stand on top of, so that then I can see, you know, I can see clarity. And I really do want everybody to get a sense of who that person is. So it was a no-brainer when I was thinking about the direction that I want to take Karen's Couch for 2015. But to bring you on the show, Cindy, to really unlock the, well, I don't know, unlock's the right word because you're an open book anyway, but I mean to really reveal you and expose you, your nakedness, if we like. And God knows she likes to get naked, really. Doesn't mind it, not too concerned. So let's just make that one of the first things that we reveal about you that's quite in depth. But I want to start off by talking to you about when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, you're this incredible woman now, but what was it like when you were a kid, when you were, let's say, 7 or 8 or 10? What did you dream of? What did you used to think about? What was life like?
Well, I think I was brought up in a real fantasy life. That's the way I saw it. I had an amazing mum and dad. I never saw them argue. I saw my father come home at night and take my mother into his arms and hug and kiss him. And, you know, we just had the most amazing life. We would have breakfast together. We would have dinner together. My mum was always in the kitchen. I knew where to find her. My dad was in his office. I knew where to find him. So it was like I was... It's just this fantasy. I had a great brother and a great sister. And it's really interesting is that I asked my brother the same question. I said, did you see your childhood as a fantasy or did you see it more like our sister saw it, a nightmare? And, yeah, my sister saw it as a nightmare. And he said it was a fantasy. Mm-hmm. We just had the most, you know, we lived in a big house and we went, you know, I don't know, it was just, that was the way it was. But I do remember what my goals were when I was 7 and 8. I remember them really well. And I wanted to be a farmer and I wanted to, I wanted to be a farmer. I wanted to marry a farmer. I wanted 12 children.
Oh, Bear Grylls, eat your heart out. Mm-hmm. I can so see you on a farm.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted 12, lots and lots of children and I wanted this beautiful farm and I wanted, I don't know, that was my hopes and dreams. Even though I was doing ballet and tap and playing netball and all those, my real yearning was to be on a farm and have lots of children.
And were you living in the city at the time?
Well, I was living in a country town in Victoria called Bendigo. Mm-hmm. And it was 20,000 people in that country town. So, yeah, for the 60s, I was 1967, I was a 7-year-old. So in the 60s, that was a big town.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, it was a country town. And we would spend a lot of time going to the country and having picnics. Like that was just something that we did a lot of. We went to the lake and had a picnic. We went into the country and had a picnic. We were always, every weekend, we were somewhere in the country having a picnic. And we had friends who were farmers and we'd go visit them on the farm for a week and they might grow wheat or they might have cattle and or chickens or pigs and you know, my uncles also grew or had pigs and my grandfather was an amazing organic farmer. So I think it was just their vibrations of their genes and cells coming to me and then living within country Victoria that set that whole thing off that's what I wanted to do, which I haven't done. Didn't marry a farmer.
So 12 children is probably a little bit late for that right now. But in terms of the farm life, that's still your dream though, isn't it? Mm. I mean, we've spoken about that and that's still your ultimate, to have this beautiful big property and to grow all of your own stuff. So that's still there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And yesterday I put a contract on 30 acres.
Shut up! That's awesome!
Yeah, I'm going to get it. I know I'm going to get it. I just might not get it at the price I want. But, yeah, I just went, hey, what, I'm 54. When I was 19, I wrote in a journal that when I got home from America from hiking 2 months through the American continent, I hiked through Colorado and Utah and all the national parks in Utah and Colorado, I went, what I really want is I want to go home and I want to get acreage and have a little cottage in my garden, and that's what I want to do. And so I wrote this at 19 and I went, you know, I'm 54. My business is at a point now where it can afford me to just have a plot. Yeah. And so, yeah, so that dream will be fulfilled. Yeah. We'll be doing champagne.
Stop it. Oh, how exciting. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you about all the little animals that you could potentially have on your farm. That's another conversation. That's potentially another show, actually. When I think about that, I get a bit excited. So, oh, that's just so exciting. I almost feel like I can't go back to your childhood again now, because that's just totally taken my breath away. I'm so excited for you and for me to hear that on the show. I'm just thrilled. I know that it's been your dream.
It has been. And like, here is a dream I had as a 7-year-old, wrote it down as a 19-year-old. And I, even though I'm 54 and I'm only fulfilling it now, I had lots of other things that has driven me along the way. And, you know, I look at the universe as you do, and I look at the universe as it presents the things that you can do at the time that you need to do that. Mm-hmm. And if I'd become a farmer and had 12 kids, I would never have done what I'm doing now. Or if I never married Howard, my husband, who's a chiropractor, not a farmer, and doesn't want anything to do with farms.
Oh, bless him.
Nothing to do with him. You know, if I hadn't married him, I do not believe I would be where I am today. Mm. So it's the universe saying, yes, you can have that, Cindy, but not yet.
Yeah.
And I think you have to trust. I think you really have to trust that even though that is your goal and you will get it, it's just not right now at 19 or 20 or 21, whatever it was. So yeah. I see it as perfect. I don't know if I would have wanted it be any different, actually. Yeah.
Isn't it amazing when you can actually look back on the journey? Because at the time you thought you probably would have thought, I want this and I want this now. And potentially, if you're like most humans, you would have thought, I want this now, and be frustrated when you don't get it and everything else seems to unfold except for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's amazing how everything is perfectly orchestrated, because you have had such a huge influence on humanity with, you know, with what you know, and we're going to get into that. The world just simply would not be the place that it is if you hadn't been down the path that you have, you know, in terms of health and nutrition and well-being. When you were growing up, and I know that you were, you know, you did some of the most amazing things as Bear Grylls, or Mrs. Bear Grylls.
As you call me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, your outbound trek. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what that was briefly, but more what it actually did for you in terms of creating the Cindy O'Meara that sits in front of us today. How did that help create you?
Well, Outward Bound was something that and the way I found Outward Bound was even more weird. I was at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and you know when you become attracted to a human being, whether it be a male or female, you become attracted to a human being and you want to get to know them. Well, I saw this girl, fit, healthy, tanned, and I don't know, there was something about her that I wanted to meet her. And so I would sit at lunch and I would sit with her and we would chat. And one day she just disappeared, one day. Like, I didn't really know who she was and have her phone number, because we didn't have mobiles back in those days. And she just disappeared. And then she showed up a month later and she looked amazing, fit and tanned and everything more. And I said, oh, where have you been? She said, I did Outward Bound. I went, what's Outward Bound? And so she told me about it, and she gave me, wasn't websites in those days, but she gave me the information. And because I didn't have a lot of money going to the University of Colorado, and, you know, you didn't have a lot of money as a student, I applied for a scholarship to go to Outward Bound. And I applied for the 2-month Western Wilderness Land Management course. And I got it. I got the scholarship. And so when school finished that year, in the September, I moved to Crested Butte and to another town 10 mile past that. And I say miles because that's what it was in America. So 10 mile past that, called Goa, which was a research station. And we basically, from that research station, we would go out on hikes, 5-day hikes, 3-day solos, belaying, lead climbing on rock climbs. You know, so our life was the bush. And what I learned in there is I learned how to overcome fear. I remember having 3 days alone in a desert.
Yeah.
No contact with anyone. I had a sleeping bag and water. That was it. And
was there a bunch of you guys all set off in different areas?
That's right.
So it wasn't just you singled out to go on your own. There was others that were doing it, but you didn't have contact with anybody else.
No, and you're only allowed in a certain area, which was fairly big, and you could never see civilization. You couldn't see any other human beings. So you're there for the 3 days. You're not allowed paper. You're not allowed pens. You're not allowed anything. You just go there with a sleeping bag and a bottle of water. And if there's no water around, someone would put water at a certain place, and you had to, if you didn't show up, they would come looking for you because they, you know, you could be bitten by a snake, there were coyotes, it was everything. So that was the signal that said, I'm okay. Right. So, and basically I spent 3 days, and I remember laying in bed the first night, it's dark and the coyotes and there's noises. And I remember in the big old house that we lived in, my sister and I used to turn all the lights on and run upstairs because we were scared, you know.
Yeah.
And I realized that I had nobody there to protect me, no one to help me, and that if I let my fear run away with me,
you'd go insane.
I would. I'd go nuts.
Yeah.
And I realized that I had to learn to protect myself. I had to learn to overcome that escalating fear, and that was one thing I really learned was that. I also learned
How did you do that? How did you overcome that fear? Because, you know, there's lots of questions that I want to ask you about later in life, but I can see that this is the foundation of it.
Yeah, it was almost like I was getting to that point where my sister and I used to do, turn on all the lights and there's no lights to turn on.
Yeah.
And then I got this overwhelming feeling of nobody's there, Cindy. You can get yourself into this state, but there's no one there to help you. And it was, I don't know what that was, but it, and you have to be put into that situation because most people know there's someone always there to help them.
Yeah.
But I was in a state where there was nobody there, and I had to get to the resources that I had in order to squash that fear and relax. And I did. And once I did it once, it was like a habit that became, I still get that fear, I have to tell you, it still comes. But what's funny is that if there's someone around,
yeah,
it escalates. If there's no one around, I can deal with it. It's the weirdest thing. Like my husband, Howie. So we were in a life-threatening situation once with our kids, and I remember looking at him in sheer panic.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
You nearly swore then.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I did. But what are we going to do? And he just looked at me and he went, don't you dare, because he could see the fear and the panic rising in me. And just the don't you dare, I went, okay, all right, he's told me not to do it. Okay, I can do this. So I went, we'll just do what we need to do in order to get out of this situation. And we did. It was scary, I have to tell you, but we got out of that situation. So then when he said, don't you dare, I went back to where I was in that state of fear and realized that I had the resources to help myself. So,
and that's what I think I've noticed with you since you and I have been friends, actually. Now that you're saying that, I'm starting to really get my finger on it, is resourcefulness, in that it doesn't matter what gets thrown your way. And let's face it, you know, you've chosen a path that, you know, and you've said this yourself, like 30 years ago when you first started talking about eating real foods and, you know, butter and cheeses and, you know, meats and proper foods.
I'm
nobody
afraid that's coming out of your mouth.
Let us not speak of it.
Yes, exactly.
When you started talking about that 30 years ago, there were no ears to listen to it, you know. Nobody was really paying attention. And even that in and of itself is enough to put a person into a state of fear, I think, especially when it's your own business, because your income depends on it, whether your longevity depends on it, whether this is actually going to get traction and leverage and momentum and actually become something, or are you just wasting your time? And you've also invested many, many years of study and, you know, personal interest in it. You know, sometimes fear can't, well, not sometimes, but I know fear can play a really big part in whether I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And to be able to sustain yourself throughout the years to get to a place where now everybody's talking about it. Now it's the most important thing on everybody's lips. And thanks to you, who have been part of the people who've been our pioneers in bringing this message to light, now people are talking about it. Now people are starting to listen. And, in fact, health and wellness is one of the most Googled subjects, you know, today. So with what you've gone through over the years of meeting with heaps of people rejecting it, not really listening to it. What I'm trying to figure out is how did you keep going? I mean, I get the resources around the fear and I really get that. But it's one thing to overcome the fear, but it's another thing to keep going. Because overcoming the fear could have said, yeah, okay, I'm not going to be frightened about this. I'm just not going to do it. How did you keep going? How did you keep yourself in the same frame of mind, knowing that this is what's needed? This is what I'm going to do. I'm not stopping, not for anybody.
Well, I think there were two things. One, I found mentors. I found people that were speaking the same talk as me, that were saying the same things and being persecuted as me, but had a bigger voice than me. So people like Bernard Jensen, Dorothy Hall, these were the people back in the 70s and 80s that I was listening to. Like, Bernard Jensen was in his 80s and he'd been talking about this for years and years and years. So I think it was finding these mentors and knowing that I was saying the right thing, and that there were other people that were saying what I was saying. I think that was number one. And number two is I had such an amazing love for it. I loved it. I loved the whole real food movement. I loved teaching. I loved the whole nutrition thing. There was just such a huge passion in that. So finding the mentor and having the passion were probably the two things that kept me going. And I remember at one stage wanting to quit because I just thought, this is just ridiculous. It's just getting too hard. But then the universe put somebody in my way to say, no, you're not quitting, Cindy, and this is what I'm going to give you in order not to quit. And that was, what I thought was a really bad thing happening, and I now believe there's nothing bad or nothing good that happens to you. It just does.
Yeah.
And it leads you to the next step. So if this one thing hadn't have happened where I said, that's it, I'm done, I'm sick of people walking out on me on my talks and calling me an idiot and just saying that what I'm saying is wrong, you know, I was just getting sick of that. And then that led to me being able to go to a conference, and a bunch of things happened, but it enabled me to go to this conference of speakers that had adversity and that had overcome the adversity of what they were talking about. So this was back in the 80s.
Right.
And it taught me so much, and I went, right, I'm ready to go on. And then I went and it just kept going like that. And then I remember going, getting to that stage again, going, nobody wants my book because I wrote a book. Yeah. Nobody wants my book. No publisher wants me. Nobody's listening. You know, you get to that stage again, and then something else is presented that pushes you again. And this was Anthony Robbins. But it wasn't Anthony Robbins that pushed me. It was the nutritionist on the Monday speaking my language to 3,000 people. This was 1995. And I went, oh, my gosh, she's speaking what I'm saying, and she's in front of 3,000 people, and Anthony Robbins thinks she's good, so I'm saying the right thing. And so that pushed me to go further. And that's what it is. It's like nothing's bad, nothing's good. It just is, and it takes you to the next level. So the fact that at 19 I had the goal to have a farm, and I am 54 and I still don't have a farm, or a property that I can grow vegetables and have cute little animals in, and, you know, things like that. That's not good nor bad. That's
just
it is. It just is to take me to where I need to be to get this amazing block of land. So,
oh, I can't wait to hear all about this off air. Oh my goodness, I almost can't wait. So, it's almost as if each time you were ready to throw the towel in, it's almost like the universe rushes in to re-inspire you. And and it puts you somewhere, or it gives you something to put you back into the spirit of what you were here or are here to do.
Yeah.
It's something that I see with you a lot because, you know, because you are an outspoken voice and you do speak up against a lot of what society considers to be normal or the right thing or what they're conditioned to do or what marketing and advertising and pharmaceutical companies have conditioned people to do. You speak ferociously against it, and, you know, I'm right behind you. What, and behind you is like literally, let me just say that. I'll be standing behind you going, no, it was Cindy that said that. No, don't you worry, girlfriend. I'll be right next to you. Right next to you.
I know you've got my back.
Oh, totes. But the thing that I'm really interested to know, you know, like, and just hearing that as a bit of a recipe, you got very clear. Well, you were clear in the very beginning that you were connected to, you were connected to the earth. You were connected to what's real. You were connected to real foods. You were connected to, you know, like your farm, and that's what's real. Not that you were connected to money and leadership and power over people. That wasn't your intention. It was about your connectedness to what's actually real, as opposed to our conditioning, if you like. And then each time you've wanted to throw in the towel because it's become too hard, you've become more and more inspired and more inspiring. So it's almost as if clarity and inspiration and passion, as you say, has been kind of the platform that's held you all of these years. And now, you know, like, there are people who still will have something to say, and we spoke about it on Up for a Chat, and I remember we were talking about one particular girl who had something to say about, you know, her view of you, and she's just a young girl who really doesn't have a great deal of experience and, you know, had an opinion. And at the time, of course, I got very defensive and I just wanted to come out punching. But when I got off the call, or when I got off the conversation with us, I thought to myself, no, I know what that is. As soon as somebody mentions your name, they all of a sudden come up in Google searches and their publicity rankings increase. So somebody else will naturally use you as a springboard, and any publicity for them is good publicity. So they're going to be naysaying or doing something against you in order to get their own notoriety. So I wonder so much whether people do it intentionally to really refute what you say, or if they do it to use you as a springboard because of your 30 years in this industry. And I just wanted to tell you that because that's what I thought about afterwards.
Yeah, I never thought of that. And because, you know why? I would never do that.
No, it's not in your frame of reference.
It's not in my frame of reference. So I would never think, you know, and look, and I think a young girl like who we're talking about, you know, who called me a semi-educated zealot, you know, I just think that she's a bit naive, you know, 2 years out, I'm 30 years out.
Yeah.
She's all, and she's got, like, I really looked her up and I went, you've got no research behind you, no projects behind you, you've not written one thing. Mm. All you've done is and I shouldn't say all you've done, but she's done a Bachelor of Science degree and a major in dietetics.
Mm.
And they do, they come out and they think they know everything. They think because they've done their clinical year, but they know everything. They know nothing.
Mm.
I'm sorry. It's years of experience that allows you to know things, and years of realizing that you have to look around at what's happening and what everyone's talking about and go, and like, I'm always like, because I thought, well, maybe she's done research, so I want to know, well, have you done that research? She hadn't.
Mm.
So I look at people and go, what is your experience? What have you done? Maybe I could learn from you. Maybe I could figure out what you're talking about. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I am wrong and I am not understanding the whole thing on gluten, because that was why she called me a semi-educated zealot, because I believe gluten is a real health issue at the moment. So
yeah.
And so I do. I then question, but then I go, No, I know what I'm doing. I'm following the right people, and my mentors are leading me in the right direction, and my philosophy is telling me that this is the right thing.
Yeah.
Because if I believe this is number one with me, is if you do not have a philosophy, then you will fall for everything.
Yeah.
It's important to stand for something, and that stand is your philosophy. Otherwise, you're going to go zigzagging all over the place, believing this person and then this person. But when you have a philosophy about life and about what you do, then you're guided to the right people. And that's what my dad, I think, taught me more than anything as a philosophy, is that he had a philosophy about life. And it was drummed into me from a very young age, and it was the philosophy of connectiveness and the philosophy of vitalism and the philosophy of we are innate intelligence, and given the right resources, we can be healthy, but stop interfering with it. And it was a very ancient philosophy, but he believed in it, and I guess that he drummed that into me. And I'm sure as a 20-year-old, if I didn't agree with it, I would have gone another way. But I did agree with him. And then it was supported with all my education. It was supported with anthropology and evolution, because evolution and anthropology is an innate intelligence that's guiding us to where we are. You know, you look at the human body. Yes. How does it work?
Yeah, that's really right.
It's stunning.
I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day who has a father in hospital with head injuries through a stroke. And, you know, gosh, we've been getting strokes and head injuries from strokes and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But we really don't know. We don't know what we're doing. You know, we don't really know everything about how the human body works. So, you know, to a certain extent, there's still this mystery package being the innate intelligence that doesn't come with the rule book. You know, I think, you know, just looking at the way that you manage to evolve in the light of great inspiration and also in the light of people who don't agree with what you do, you always just keep moving forward. You always just keep putting one foot in front of the other and being willing to not know. You know, when you say, maybe I don't know, maybe somebody else does know something I don't know, let me go and research, let me find that out. You're willing to not know, whereas I think, you know, a lot of people stay very stuck because they want to know, they're desperate to know, and if they don't know, then they'll make it up. Or they'll pretend to know, or they'll ride on the coattails of somebody else that knows, but they won't actually do the research and find it out for themselves, which I think is what makes you such it makes you somebody inspiring to follow, because you're always reinventing, you're always recreating. And that's what we spoke about on Up for a Chat the other day too, which was really cool.
And when you do make a mistake, you let your followers or the people that are reading you know, and you go, hey, guys, I didn't know this. And you know, that's one thing, you know, about the wheat grain at the moment. You know, I always said, you know, make your own bread, make your own muffins, do pancakes. And it was always with organic wheat. And as far as I knew, organic wheat was the staff of life. It was from the biblical times. It was what we survived on.
Yeah.
But as time has carried on and I've learnt, I realised that I can't endorse that anymore. But I give people the reason why I can't, because most people go, oh, you know, that's just stupid. But when they hear all the information that what has happened to it, then they go, maybe I never thought of it that way. I didn't know that that's what had happened to our wheat and why we have gluten intolerances. So, yeah, it's always a journey, and keep yourself open-minded and listen from other people. And often you can learn more from the people who are being negative as opposed to the people that are just praising you up. And so it's true. Important to look at both. Yeah.
So if we were to finish off the show and I was to say to you, Cindy Amira, who are you? Who would you say you are at the deepest level of yourself? Who are you?
You know, if I, the first thing that springs to mind is I'm a mum.
Oh, how beautiful.
I am. I'm a mum. And whether I'm a mum to the three that I bore, you know, that I gave birth to, or whether I'm a mum to another 1,000 people that I can nurture and help through their lives, in the deepest core, I'm a mum. Yeah. That's the only answer I can come up with. And I don't see anything else there. But a mother can mean many things. But
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. You've never said that before. That's beautiful. Thank you, my love. I mean, I could talk to you for another hour and a half, maybe three. But thank you. I'm so grateful for you joining me on the show today. This has been, it's been enlightening, but it's also been really cool to be able to dive deep into the heart and soul of who you are and get a bit of a sense as to what went on between your two ears as you've grown up through the years. But I know that there's still so much more there. We've only just sort of tipped the surface. So we might have to get you back on the show, love. We might just have to do that, because I want to know, I'm keen to know what your intentions are for the rest of the year. But you've got to go and we've got to wrap up the show. So we'll get you back on. How about them apples?
Sounds wonderful. I'd love that. You know that. And I just want to just say one thing before you do wrap up, and that is you know, you came into my life for a really important reason, and you have been a great mentor of mine, and you need to know that too. And I think with Kim, you and me, we are mentors to each other.
For sure.
and we're in each other's lives for a very good reason. So, you know, like it's not just one way, it's actually always, my darling.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? It's always, always.
It's always, always.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, my love.
Thank you.
On that note, everybody, please thank Cindy O'Meara for joining us on the show today. It's been an absolute treat and an honor. Go to our Facebook page at allthews.facebook.com/Karen's Couch and post your comments and any questions for Cindy. I'm sure I can filter them through to her. I have a direct line. Also, you can post your comments at allthews.karenscouch.com. Thank you so much for joining us here on Karen's Couch, where we bring all the truth to your unanswered questions. I'm going to see you here next week. Make sure that you go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and of course, tell everybody that you know that you love Karen's Couch and you also love Up for a Chat. We're going to see you here next week. Thanks again for tuning in. Bye for now.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives. Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.